Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to, that show about NXT, PWT Talks NXT. I am your host. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk. Do you want to email us? I thought a lot of people would email us after this show, but we didn't have a heavy email week, at least not yet. Maybe people are still trying to make sense of what they just saw. But we did have some emails, and we will go to a few of those. Why don't I start with one of those, and we're going to get my brothers in arms to weigh in on that. If you also want to call us, that is 515-605-9345, and hit the 1 to let us know that you've got a question. So our first email, this is from Kevin Cantani. Sorry for the late email. Hope this email finds you well. The last 2 weeks have been nuts at school as we scheduled spring classes for the students. Needless to say, I'm beaten, ready for a nap. That said, I have two questions. One, how much longer will they go before giving us a Finn update? And two, how much longer do they play the Scream character out until the big reveal? Thanks, as always. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Cantani, Ph.D. How long before a Finn update? That's really hard to say. You know what's funny is that I didn't think of it until you just emailed me that. That email came in right before I put this show on, and it occurred to me there was just so much going on, so much business on the show that they made me not think about it, which I guess is successful because that's probably what they're looking for because they don't know how it's going to end up in that championship picture. But that's a good question. Number two, how long do they play the Scream character out until the big reveal? I think it's already been too long. I think you needed to do it at the end of last week, or at least raise the question this week. We now have 2 weeks in a row where the announcers didn't even ask the question. It is the only thing the announcers should be thinking about, and they didn't even ask the question. They didn't ask the question last week or this about who that might be. Tom Staub, who are you? And tell me things.
Oh, do I have to? I am at Tom Staub, and they don't want me thinking about Finn, so I guess I'm not going to think about Finn. He'll probably come back when I don't know. I mean, they don't want me thinking about him, and so many of my takeaways tonight are gonna be that NXT's DNA is changing, so it's hard to read what they're doing next week. Anything that it looks like they're setting up right now could be completely different, and it would still fit the logic of the shows that they've been giving us, particularly over the past 4 or 5 weeks. But you know, building to this point pretty much ever since Great American Bash, and tonight was probably the new low point of the year overall. And for the Scream characters, yeah, I mean, one of them even got a close up and we can see right through the eye holes. You know, it because it's obscured, I can't say for 100% certain that it's Austin Theory, but it sure looks like Austin Theory, which is sure who we thought it was last week. And then sitting in Candace's backseat, that sure looks like Indy Hartwell. And that one isn't even a mystery. So, yes, it's already been 1 week too long on that reveal.
Yeah, why keep Indy under the mask when they've already established that Indy's working with them? Is that just so that the four of them can have their moment at the same time? You know, because this show needs a four-person faction. Because we've only got two already. Maybe they're working toward a second War Games match that'll be 2-2 down gender lines. I don't know. At least it would be something. Nate Lindberg, who are you? And what the hell did we just watch?
I'm not really quite sure what we just watched myself, but I do know that I am Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I am now posting on Thursdays, so keep an eye out for those when I post them. So I guess tackling Dr. Kevin, I'm sorry, Dr. Catani's email here. So how much longer before the Finn update? Believe it or not, I did actually think about Finn Balor right at the end of this, because I'm trying to think of what they're going to do with Ciampa, and we'll talk about Ciampa in a minute. But I was trying to think of what they're going to do with Ciampa, you know, where he might go from here. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe the NXT title. Hey, wait a minute. What about the NXT title? So I was actually trying to think about that right before we went on the air myself. And I'm not really sure. The fact that they haven't said anything yet makes me think that he's fine. As fine can be, you know, that gruesome injury can be, but he's able to come back, and they're not going to vacate the title, and they're going to just reinsert him back into some story here. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it. I feel like if they were going to vacate the title, they probably would have done it this week after Halloween Havoc. Because I mean, we're kind of starting to build into, I'm assuming War Games or whatever the next takeover is going to be, coming up on Survivor Series weekend here. If we get one, I'm sure we will. But that's kind of my thought anyway. But that's all just kind of speculation, of course. I agree with you guys. I think the Scream character has gone 1 week too long. I think it should have either 1 week too long or it should be, next week. This week, they kind of teased it a little bit. I think the reveal should have been this week or, if not, at the end of the show last week. Obviously they didn't. I agree with Tom. It looked like Theory and it looked like Hartwell. I'm thinking it's two separate people. I don't think I would have thought that if you didn't bring up the fact that in Scream, Tom, you didn't bring up last week, Scream, the two separate ghost faces. I didn't even think about that until you brought it up. But I do think that probably is the case. I don't know. We'll see. I'm hoping that it's next week because I don't know. I don't want to see this Halloween stuff bleed too much into Christmas.
And if nothing else, the announcers have to acknowledge it. Like, they have not acknowledged it outside of the matches where it happened. They didn't ask about it after, and they didn't ask about it this week, even after those segments. Both of those segments had Ghostface in them, and they did not acknowledge it. So, on a show with a whole lot of sports entertainment, our main event, Tommaso Ciampa versus Velveteen Dream, didn't really have any. It was very much a concept match with Ciampa just relentlessly targeting the wrist injury of Velveteen Dream. This was 13:32, Ciampa goes over in what is essentially a long squash because Dream did not get a lot of offense here, which I guess that's still maybe some sort of fan service because people just don't even know if they want to see Dream. But then this has the feeling of how did this warrant main event status when Dream hasn't been winning matches like at all. The only thing I could come away with was I guess this existed to assert that Ciampa is a babyface again, because this was the most heavy-handed their crowd has ever been. I'm just yelling shut up at my screen as they just continue to yell over and over and over relentlessly during every segment just to make sure we know who those faces and heels are. But also, this could serve to prove to be Ciampa having, just by necessity, to hold on to that championship again because Finn won't be able and there's nothing else they can do. Does it feel like a long time ago that we got O'Reilly versus Finn Balor. A long time ago. Nate, the main event.
Yeah, that long time ago indeed. As I keep saying every time Dream's on the TV, I don't really want to see him on the TV. It is hard for me to get into his matches because every time I see him, all I can think of is, the giant elephant in the room. So there's that. I tried to get into the match for Ciampa, like I said last week, Ciampa's probably my favorite wrestler in NXT, favorite male wrestler in NXT. So it's hard for me to not get into the match because of Ciampa, but then at the same time, Dream, I don't know. It's a little bit of a weird dynamic for me, but I like the Ciampa here. I like, you know, the intensity that he had. You know, it's just kind of, you know, more of the same out of Ciampa, which is not a bad thing. That please don't think that's a bad thing. That's a good thing, because that's what I want out of him. I think it is it seems like it is a face turn for him here. Yeah, I don't know. The match itself, I could have take or left. You know, it was obviously, you know, kind of to play off of the whole cast, you know, where we hit him with the cast, cost him the match, you know, against the triple threat with Kushida. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it was okay. I'm not really sure what they're going to do with Ciampa from here. I mean, you know, as we said last week, he's kind of reached that you know, S tier in NXT. You know, it doesn't really matter what he's doing. It's important, whether it's nothing or, you know, whatever it is, he's doing something important. People want to see him on their screen. So, you know, my thought is something to do with the NXT championship. When Finn Balor comes back, I have a feeling that he was going to be slotted for the NXT championship when Karrion Kross had it before Karrion Kross got injured. And then Balor got slotted in and then Balor got injured. So I don't know. I feel like that's where he should be. He doesn't necessarily need the title, but I feel like that's probably where he should be right now. It's kind of dancing around it, whether or not it's to elevate somebody else or, you know, whether to get a little more shine on him, although I don't know if he necessarily needs it, but get a little more shine on him. And then, you know, pass that shine on to somebody else down the road. I don't really know exactly where they're going to go with them right now. It's a little strange. Tom said the DNA of NXT is changing. And I really liked that analogy because it really seems to be what it is right now. I don't know if it has something to do with, you know, the pandemic wrestling, trying to counter program what's on the other channel or what, but this does not seem like the same program that I watched, you know, a year ago. Fans or no fans, you know, storyline, totally, you know, I'm talking story in particular here. So,
yeah. So yeah. This match went 13:32. It was the fourth longest match on the show. None of these really had issues coming in. I mean, Moon and Kai kind of did as they came in. But this went 13:32, the fourth longest match. And this show had 61 minutes, 39 seconds of wrestling on it, which is a little heavy, but it felt heavier just because so little was going on. Tom and I, every Saturday, hit you with the NXT 8 years back podcast, and that show's been fun to watch, and a lot of interesting things. We're seeing the beginnings of Roman Reigns and the first championship defenses of Seth Rollins, so check that out on VIP if you haven't yet. But when Byron Saxton has to promote a match and there's nothing going for it, what he says is, "And up next, we've got a tremendous matchup with tag team implications." What does that mean? Like, what? It's, there are no implications because there's no tag team championships. And that's kind of what this felt like, especially this main event, because I wasn't thinking about it at the time, but it doesn't seem like there are any stakes here, Tom.
You should definitely check out that show on Saturdays on VIP. This week is a good week to jump on because Roman Reigns just debuted. And if I do say so myself, the one that we've got in the can for Saturday is a fun listen. We had fun doing it anyway. The difference is that while NXT from 8 years back definitely has a lot of matches that don't have issues going into them, or they certainly, if they do, they certainly don't feel like they are presiding too heavily over the action. Yes, this is partially the retrospective context in which we're watching it, but it also feels like so many of the wrestlers we are watching are on journeys. It matters whether they win or lose. Tonight, that was not the case for so many wrestlers up and down the card, and perhaps, maybe, no more so than in the main event. It's close with a couple of other matches, but you know, I'm not trying to make it a thing, but there's one every week. There's more than one this week, but this is the big who cares match for me this week. I guess it's not really, because my Who Cares match has been one that I don't really have anything to say about. And this one, I'm looking at it the same way you are, Kelly. Like, I guess it's just to reinforce that Ciampa is a main eventer. And there certainly wasn't too much else going on in the show that you could really force into the main event slot and not have similar questions about. As much as you'd like to say that for one of the women's matches, but it's, you know, we see women in the main event enough lately that it's not a token spot for them anymore. It's not like, anyway, that's a different tangent. But this, we're looking at a feud that it was Kushida's feud. And then all of a sudden, Ciampa's just slid into Kushida's spot in this feud. Ciampa should be more important than a guy who's just out there to show off his work rate for 13 minutes and be flipped heel or baby depending on the injuries of other people who are positioned as stars. Ciampa is a guy that you should have a plan for. You shouldn't say, oh, crap, Karrion Kross got injured. He needs to be heel. Oh, crap. Let's correct course because Finn Balor got injured now.
He's the big show role right now.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah. I mean, I wish I could contest that, but you're right. And on the other side of it, I don't feel like we should have to set aside the real life issues of Velveteen Dream, but we also can't spend every single episode of PWT Talks NXT harping on them. That said, that defeatist attitude about it is a win for NXT. They want us to just tire of talking about it and accept him back on TV. But playing right into their hand and forcing myself to see past that, Velveteen Dream has less importance than basically anyone on the entire show. He's just a body for the more important wrestler to work off of. Same observations as you about the crowd. I mean, I felt it for a while, and perhaps no more so than tonight with the real crowd, the fake crowd noise, and the banging on the plexiglass. And of course, now it's not just wrestlers banging on the plexiglass and not trying to break company property. It's fans banging on the plexiglass and not caring whether or not they do. They probably would love to knock it over. And there's no ebb and flow to the pacing. There hasn't been for weeks, but it's still just in your face constantly, no slowing down. There was one match tonight that was the exception to that, and I'll give that one kudos when we get to it. It's like Tom Green screaming in your face for 2 hours. It's a very patience trying part of my week right now.
You know, Tom Green played Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother last year. And he's like the most laid back, normal dude that was in the whole house.
I don't believe it.
The most normal, laid back, likable people on the show were Tom Green and Eva Marie, because Eva Marie played it. And she was very good at it, like good enough that they actually eliminated her early because they recognized she was a threat to win. So there you go. Surprises all around in the world of Celebrity Big Brother. Let's just talk about that instead. Tamar Braxton won. Sorry, spoilers. Okay, so I know that I've mentioned this before in terms of other things, but I always go back to this dippy TV motivational speaker who thought that if he just put his hand out to illustrate that word was important, but then did it on every word, that it would be great. And that's what they're doing with the crowd right now. They're having the crowd call out, like, the crowd is the boy who cried NXT, NXT, NXT every single, like, every time they come back, it's like you just missed something. This is awesome when this is average. And then just the rumble of boos during the mid-show segment, which – I thought the segment was good, but the boos just got so relentless and so monotonous that it actually started to piss me off listening to the crowd.
To play devil's advocate, and I I agree with you. I agree with you. But there's also this part of me, like, it eventually grew on me, or not grew on me. It got to a point where I was getting angry and kind of like, I was over it. But at first, anyway, it's just refreshing to hear a crowd. Even though I know it's just, it is piped in and stuff like that, but you can still see that, you can see the crowd, things like that. In a way, it's refreshing because we haven't really gotten anything like that for so long. But yeah, they're going over the top with it. It's like, I wish they'd dial it back just a bit, because it's like they're trying to give you a little bit of something that you're not getting right now because of this pandemic. But they're cranking it up to like 13, not 11.
It's just like they weren't listening to the moment. Like when Pat McAfee was talking, yeah, they could have like saved it for the big moments and booed at the big moments. But it seemed like the boo guy just hit the boo button and then he went out for a smoke. He's like, a job well done. And then he came back and turned his boo button off. whatever. let's get to the phone lines. Let's talk to Jarrell.
Now I'm just picturing Road Dogg sitting back there with the boo button.
Right. Oh, boy. Who is responsible for... Okay. Jarrell, tell us what you thought. I think that Jarrell is not with us at the moment.
Sounds like he's watching TV.
Yeah. I hear his TV, but I don't hear him. So, perhaps we will go back to that in time, but in the meantime, we will go to another match. Let's go to the opener, Ember Moon versus Dakota Kai. This went 16-19. It was the longest match on the show. It seems like they pace out these matches very similarly. They give them a really similar amount of time, and we're seeing that a little more this week. So Moon versus Kai. Dakota Kai goes over in 16-19. There was a distraction from Raquel Gonzalez. Nothing real. I don't even remember what it was because so many things happened on the show since then. And Kai went over. So I was thrilled, even though Moon will win this feud. So Kai over Moon, but I don't know that I've got any more to say about it, Tom.
Quickly, it appears, it's the first time I've noticed it anyway, that they've given Raquel Gonzalez a new logo, and it looks like she's now like a personal injury law firm. Just Gonzalez and Gonzalez, call us if you get in a car accident. That's just the sense that it evokes. So that one's a miss for me, but this is the one that I actually thought reached a different pace. I thought that they didn't bring it down necessarily, but it started off at the top of the show. It's, you know, there's an edict for every single thing on the show. You know, you've just got to be fast and furious and never let up and, you know, let the injuries rack up, I guess. But, you know, it started off that way. And I'm just rolling my eyes like, here we go again. There's I'm not going to get anything out of this match that I was actually kind of interested in, because it's just going to be, you know, 12 to 13 minutes, and it ended up going 16 of just look how fast they can go without stopping. And they brought it down a little bit. They had a little bit more of an ebb and flow to it, and take away. Okay. Well, I will also say that, individually, Moon, I thought looked very good. She's clearly working on honing a new version of the Ember Moon character. And I thought tonight was a success in further developing that, just sort of the new beats that she hits, and she has like a new Hulk up thing that she does that looks like it could be a bit better, but it's not terrible. Kai is absolutely the kind of worker that you can put out there trusting that someone who is trying to hone a new version of their character can bounce off of. So I thought it was a good pairing, but the best thing coming out of it is that I thought people were saying like, oh, it's cool that we're going to get a feud out of this. And I'm thinking, I just think that Ember's going to step right over Kai. And this is where Kai settles in, unfortunately, as we've been calling her as the odd woman out. But it does appear that with the shenanigans finish, we're going to get a bit of a program out of it. Yes, Ember Moon will win in the end, but at least Kai is not left yet again without anything to do, looking like somebody who just loses in one match and doesn't get a feud out of it.
Yeah, and Ember working on her character both in and out of the ring in ways that I think are successful on both ends. So we're seeing a version of her that can win in a lot of different ways, which really, if you want to be a main eventer, that's something that is a really useful skill. So that's cool to see out of her and see those changes in her and see her kind of work off the rust in rather quick fashion. I liked this match, too. I just don't know that I had a lot to say about it. It was a surprise, but I think one that will serve them both well, Dakota, for the reasons you mentioned, and Ember, because now she doesn't have that undefeated streak hanging over her. And then when she gets stopped in her tracks in her first championship match, that can really kind of hurt somebody if they haven't been humanized to that point. And I think we see that with a lot of monsters. When the monster loses their mystique, then what's the act? But this is different now because she doesn't have that undefeated streak kind of as the monkey on her back, which I really think it harms people as much as it helps them, unless they're good enough to, or unless they're not good enough to overcome it. Nate.
So I'm glad that this was the match that you thought had a different pacing, Tom, because this is also the match that I thought had a different pacing. I definitely picked up on it. I wouldn't say right away either. I was actually thinking the same thing, that this was going to kind of be like another high work rate match, or the same thing we've seen probably for the past like 5 or 6 weeks. But no, it really wasn't. They did kind of dial it back a little bit. It had a nice pacing to it. It had a nice flow to it. You know, there's a little bit of a story there that they're telling. With Kai and Moon. At first I kind of thought that this was going to be a very quick, well, not a quick, but an easy Ember Moon win. But then I think it was like halfway through the match, I saw Raquel Gonzalez is standing outside the ring. She was there the whole time. But as I'm seeing her there, I'm like, okay, she's probably going to interfere. And that's what ended up happening. It was probably my favorite match tonight. I don't think it was anything groundbreaking, but I do like this new style out of Ember Moon. This new character, she seems to, the ring rust that we've seen the past few weeks seems to be gone. Or at least, almost gone. She's knocked most of it off. She's certainly coming along. I like this new iteration of Ember Moon. It's kind of taking her old character, giving it a little bit of a new fresh paint of coat. Fresh coat of paint. I knew I was going to say that as I was thinking it. I'm like, I'm going to say fresh paint, fresh coat of paint. Paint
no,
of
I
coat.
Thought you did it
nope.
on purpose.
Nope, I didn't. I didn't.
I,
did I didn't want it.
Totally could have gotten away with that because
I
thought
didn't.
You did it on purpose too.
Yep.
In the Boogie Nights tradition. can't say the
yep.
line.
Yep. But no, so I'm definitely interested or intrigued by that. Ember Moon is obviously going to be the one to go over in this feud ultimately. But at the same time, I think this is also a good place for Kai. Like you said, you guys both said she hasn't really had a whole heck of a lot to do over the past, I'd say maybe about 6, 7, 8 weeks. So you're getting her back in a prominent spot. Even if it is, she's going to probably end up losing this feud. It is to elevate somebody like Ember Moon. That obviously shows they do have that trust in her she's going to be able to help get that new character over. So I'm on board with it. Don't have a whole heck of a lot more to say about it. But thumbs up.
Let's go to
fresh
the
paint of coat in the driveway, Kurt. Sorry if my mind's not on the look of the film.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's go to the two Gargano segments of the night. So we've got Shotzi Blackheart versus Toni Storm. This was one of the Gargano moments. We'll get there. This was the semi-main. This went 13:48. Toni Storm goes over Shotzi Blackheart when, after 8 or 10 minutes on the Tron, Candice LeRae shows up, and she's to set the stage for this. Shotzi had her brief talk segment with with Mackenzie Mitchell, which I thought went well until she absolutely was mandated to hit her her catchphrase because you gotta. Then Tony did her thing and said, "Yeah, it'll be a fun competition," but she made an error in picking her as an opponent. And then Shotzi comes out and she's furious because she thinks Toni Storm has done something to her mini tank. Now, why would Shotzi, the character, be this dumb? Like, she knows what happened last week. She knows who got rid of her tank, but she had to think it was Toni for the sake of the beginning of this match. So Toni goes over in 1348 after Candace shows up on the Tron and then stops a monster truck, not really a monster truck, whatever, huge tires, as it's coming down the street, so it won't run over the tank, but then gets in herself as Ghostface is in the back seat and runs over the tank as Shotzi wails. Then Toni rolls her up and she consoles her afterwards as Shotzi is crying over the loss of her tank. So, yeah. Then we also had Johnny Gargano playing the game of life at home against the other Ghostface, or maybe the one Ghostface, but probably the other Ghostface. I like the silly stuff here, but considering like the seriousness of what Ghostface did, this is once again the different DNA. This wouldn't have been played for chuckles all that long ago because Gargano and LeRae are despicable, and that's supposed to be the act. So let me also go to Brian Alston's email. Hello, sending this email in the blind because the tonight's edition hasn't started yet. As mentioned last week, what if the ghost face that assisted Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae in their Halloween Havoc Championship matches were Austin Theory and Edie Hartwell, respectively? This sets up to some incredible storylines. A new faction, dinner at the Garganos. Austin protects Johnny. Candice takes Indy to the next level. Johnny and Candice play matchmaker and go out on double dates. War Games, the eventual breakup. And no, I'm not going to ask your opinions on directors, the Wachowskis. I mean, if we do that, we'll do it on the other show because Tom and I love our tangents on that show, primarily those with a film basis. Lots of talk about Napoleon Dynamite this week, so you'll have to tune in Saturday to hear that. So the Garganos, still important, but very silly also. This match with Toni versus Shotzi was not great. It was kind of Shotzi stopping dead in her tracks after a really, really strong streak of matches. And Toni's... Tom?
yep. The Wachowski sisters have... when they miss, they really, really miss. But they've got some really good films under their belts as well. Speed Racer in particular is very underrated, really fascinating process through which they made that one. The good goofiness for Gargano's bit is that it's probably the weirdest Seventh Seal reference that I've ever seen, with not death, but Father Death, as it were, the name of the costume in the movie when it gets picked up in whatever scene that is. Playing the game of life. It was weird. And they're still doing this wheel thing, which I thought was hilarious the first time they did it, and they sure did too. I'll steal your line, Kelly. It's like a toddler who made their parents laugh. They've not let go of it on social media, and they've not let go of it on the show. I'm sick of hearing about Johnny Gargano and wheels now. It was funny the first time, and it hasn't been funny since. Everybody wants to talk about how main rostery NXT is becoming. And here we have a video screen distraction finish at the end of a match that actually felt like it had meaning, because contrary to so many other wrestlers on the show, Toni and Shotzi, who I don't view on the potential future women's champion echelon, not quite. And I'm going to stop myself from dogging on Toni too much more. I just don't view them on that echelon. It feels like they are on journeys. It feels like the wins and losses matter right now. Tony just came back. She's being reintroduced. We were saying before the Rhea videos tonight that she might be next up for Io. And Shotzi obviously has been very vocal lately. Seems like she's deliberately trending back downward, but they're trying to protect her a bit. And so after almost a 14-minute long match, they do this silly finish. So the ending doesn't mean anything. And now I guess we're just going to get Candice and Indy versus Tony and Shotzi, which seems like a major step down for Tony because this is not her feud. I would imagine that Indy is the expendable one here. It's tough to make sense of stuff because of what I said about NXT changing lately. I want to see Indy trending upward, but it also feels like she's the one who's going to take the falls for Candice before hopefully breaking away. In a nutshell, this was a segment that I was surprised in liking for quite a while before it just all tanked.
I just hate when there is heel interference 10 minutes into a match that theoretically could have happened in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Like if that was her plan to do this to ruin her, because she can do it to ruin her day anytime, but seeing as how she seemingly wanted to cost her the match, why not just do it right away? Because you don't know when it's going to end. I hate it. It is so main rostery. Nate?
Do you know what I hate? I'll tell you what I hate. I hate it when they change the rules of a match for the sake of the story. Now, I know wrestling is scripted, and I know the rules are arbitrary because wrestling is scripted. However, when you have two competitors outside the ring and the referee is counting to 10, if one of them enters the ring, the 10 count typically continues. Well, it didn't. Shotzi gets in the ring, and the ref stops the count at 8, and the announcers go, oh, Shotzi broke up the count, which allowed Lerae to then come on the screen and everything. No, Storm should have got counted out of that match. Storm shouldn't have won. Storm shouldn't have got that one little tidbit, that one little part of the match destroyed the whole thing for me. I just like Tom, I was enjoying the match for the most part. But at the same time, I also kind of started to see a lot of those holes between Shotzi and Tony. This was not a great match. Technically anyway, but as far as like the story and things like that, I was kind of like enjoying it to an extent. And then that 8 count break, that just took me right out of the moment. Then, you know, as soon as Lerae came up on the screen, I'm like, Storm's going to get the distracted finish, and she shouldn't, she should be counted out right now. And sure enough, that's what happened. And I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy about it. I don't know what else to say. I'm stumbling here because I'm not happy about it. It should not have happened that way. So I'm going to end it.
And we see this all the time on the main roster. And if I was on one of Wade's shows, I would be just sort of more defeated and more like, yeah, this is what they do, and trying to see through it to the storyline they tell. But this is not the NXT that we're familiar with, and it's that much more jarring as a result.
This isn't our show, man. This isn't our show.
Mid-show main event segment, Drake Maverick and Killian Dane versus Ever-Rise in their third meeting, but it won't be the last. This went 3:54. The story of the match was Drake had an easy moment where he could have tagged in Dane. You know, the only issue with this act, as far as the matches go, is Drake always takes such a beating that it's kind of silly that Dane so quickly tags out in the beginning of the match just to create a face in peril situation. Like it's a little far-fetched, but whatever. It is far down the list of gripes I have. Drake and Dane versus Ever-Rise. This was going, it seemed like they were taking it to an interesting place with Drake having the ability to tag and then not, and then Dane having to figure out how to navigate that situation. But instead, the four-man group, that being Pat McAfee, Pete Dunne, Oney Lorcan, and Danny Burch, ran to the ring and laid waste to all four guys, ruining matches and then cutting promos. I guess this is the NWO blueprint they're doing, which I'm not against, seeing if this works. I thought that this was one of the most successful segments, although I really was kind of interested in seeing what the Dane and Drake dynamic ended up being. So Pat McAfee did some work on the mic. Oney still doesn't have much to say, but Burch got some words in. Pete got some words in. Pete was really reinforced as a heel tonight. They talked about raising the banner to Undisputed Era for all the things they did, but now they're gone and they're nothing. Pete did indeed bring into the story that he had never forgiven Roderick Strong for turning on him during the tag team classic or the Dusty Classic. And so we had that going for it. There were a lot of things story-wise going for this. They burn the banner. Pete's the one who does the deed. And then they go about their business later on outside. They go to – actually, it might have been just a continuation – they go out to an SUV and they start to get in. Killian Dane jumps Pat McAfee and actually gets the better of him, but the 4-on-1 beatdown, of course, ensues. So I guess we have our first fall guy for Pat McAfee on TV, I assume. But anyway, on this 4-man group that still doesn't have a name, hard to say whether that is because they don't have a name or because they want this to feel a little bit more real and organic. I don't know how you're going to find a way to feel real and organic on a show that doesn't. But part of the, I guess that's part of the reason that NWO worked so well, because it really seemed like they were just dudes that didn't care on a show full of like enormously melodramatic characters, and I guess that's why it worked. And if nothing else, I suppose maybe that can work. Although Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, they ain't in some ways, even though I do love this tag team that does now currently hold the tag team championships. So the mid-show main event segment, Tom.
Fall guy for McAfee, perhaps. It's really hard to know where this is going, not just because of all the curveballs that brought it to us in the first place, but because it feels like there are so many different directions and moving parts here that it would be foolhardy to even predict. Like, there are so many different things that I'm coming up with that involve singles matches with Maverick, Dane, tag matches with Maverick and Dane, Undisputed Era returning, and either Maverick and Dane looking worse on the other end of it or ending up tag team champions on the other end of it. So I suppose I'm intrigued in that regard. And the other positives are that, yeah, I am still invested in Drake and Maverick. Yes, I did want to finish to this match. If I'm just trying to be nice, I will say that, yeah, these guys ruining this match makes me like them less. I'm not as entertained by them, even though I find McAfee to generally be pretty entertaining, and these wrestlers put on good matches, and I like their attitudes and whatnot. It makes me view them more as genuine heels because they deprived me of a finish that I thought was going to be meaningful for a tag team that I'm interested in. It's not something I want to compliment too hard, because I really would have just preferred to get the finish to the match and continue the Dane and Maverick story the way that I thought that it was going. But it's too soon to say. I also cried foul when this whole Dane and Maverick thing started, and I thought it was a terrible position for both guys. And then here we are, and it's one of my favorite things on the show. So they've developed that trust, and I'll continue to go along with it. And the positive in the promo was that, yes, indeed, they brought the Pete Dunne's history with the Undisputed Era into it. So that segues. There's nice continuity there. This is the first time that I'm going to be critical of Pat McAfee, though, because it seems like that edict of just always being high volume and always moving at a fast pace and everything, which McAfee can handle better, and he's very obnoxious and very abrasive. You referenced it earlier, Kelly, with the boo button. this was such a just loud, obnoxious, annoying segment that it went beyond, okay, they're getting heel heat and it's effective because I genuinely don't like them right now. It went to like, okay, the only reason I'm not turning off my TV is because I'm doing a podcast on this tonight. And it just became so aggravating that I did not want to watch it. And in the fantasy world, where not only do I not do this podcast, but in the fantasy world where I don't do it and NXT hasn't already lost me as a viewer because of the bad TV in the recent weeks, this is where I would have turned it off.
Well, there you go. Nate on the mid show.
So I wasn't quite as down on it, but I wasn't, overly thrilled either. So I do like Pat McAfee, in pretty much anything he's done so far. But I agree. I think he was kind of a little too dialed up tonight. And I think that in a way might've been by design. But then again, he's always that way. So maybe not, I don't know. But, it did. He seemed like a little bit, it seemed just a little too over the top, a little too energetic. Now, at the same time, one thing that I did really like here was the other three, Oney Lorcan, Danny Burch, and Pete Dunne. I like it because this is such a different, such a different spot for them. Pete Dunne, yeah, he's played a heel before. He's been in a kind of a relatively prominent spot before. But especially the other two, Burch and Lorcan, they're kind of new to this kind of main event level spot. And I think they're doing a good job so far. I mean, it's still new. We haven't really seen them do a whole heck of a lot other than kind of stand next to McAfee. But even tonight when, Burch got on the mic, it was, just his cadence and the way he spoke. I liked it. It didn't seem scripted. I'm sure it was, but it seemed authentic. That's what I was looking for. It seemed authentic. And just same thing with Dunne. It was a little bit more robotic in a way, but at the same time, it felt like the words seemed authentic. And I feel like the roboticness was on purpose, just kind of like a, tough, stoic type of a character. So I give that roboticness a little bit of a pass. I think that was on purpose, but what he was saying anyway seems authentic. And same thing with Pat McAfee, everything that he says also seems authentic. Doesn't seem, scripted and like he's reading from bullet points or anything like that. So I'll definitely give that as a plus, but, I agree. It kind of got a little bit too, it got a little bit too much for me. One thing too is I will admit that I did like the little switch up at the end there where they said that they were going to take the flag and, hang it from the rafters and, kind of pay homage to, the Undisputed Era in a mocking way. And I figured that's what they were going to do. They were going to point and laugh at the thing and, whatever. And I thought that would be, that would have been enough to get them some good heel heat. But then, they kind of took it to that next level. They put it in the trash can, lit it on fire. I liked that. I thought that was a nice touch and a little bit of an extra swerve, if you will, at the end, because that wasn't really what I was expecting them to do. I guess overall it was, I'm kind of like lukewarm on the segment. I want to be behind it. I want to be behind it, but I guess the execution of it in the length of the segment too, kind of detracted from that. Plus the fact that I also did want to see what was going to happen with Dane, Maverick and Ever-Rise. They're two teams that I've been invested in. I mean, I've been invested in Ever-Rise for years. I talk about it, I think, every week at this point. But, I've watched them in Chikara. I've seen them live. They've been a couple guys that I've liked for a while. So, they might be, kind of newcomers and jobbers on NXT. But, I see them and I'm like, hey, I know them. There's that. And then same thing with Drake and Maverick. Dane and Maverick. It's an act where at first I was kind of like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this, but it's grown on me. It's one of my favorite things on the show at this point. And, now we didn't quite find out, what happened at the end of that match because of this. So, I think obviously by design, they did that to get more heat on this new trio, this new faction, rather. I don't know why I said trio, this new faction. So I guess in a way it worked, but I don't know. I would have still liked, I think that feud